the powers of mind, though of the higher grades of mind, interpret in their own falsifying way the workings of the time, spirit, or the inner nature. Now he speaks of how every act and every thought of God is subjected to the accounting process of the mind and interpreted as inevitable steps in the working out of necessity. It is no more a movement of the free will of God, but always related to an antecedent cause leading to an anticipated effect. To read the lines, in the wide sequence of necessity steps predicted, every act and thought of God, every act and thought of God predicted, valued, interpreted in the wide sequence of the steps of necessity, its values weighed by the accountant mind. Mind constitutes itself as an accountant and subjects every happening to its probing scrutiny. It checked in his mathematized omnipotence, the omnipotence of God is reduced to mathematics, calculation, and in that process it lost its divine aspect of miracle and was a figure in the cosmic sum. Every act of God, every thought of God loses its divine aspect of miracle and becomes one more figure in the total cosmic sum. The mighty mother's whims and lightning moods, nature, inner nature, her whims, her sharp and lightning moods arisen from her all-wise, unruled delight. There is a wisdom, an innate wisdom in nature, and nature bubbles with a delight that is unregulated. It is not subjected to any kind of classification or order. Now her moods and whims really arise from this all-wise, omniscient, unruled delight in the freedom of her sweet and passionate breast. That's what it is, as far as nature is concerned. But with the intervention of the mind, these moods and whims, robbed of their wonder, were chained to a cause and aim. All these spontaneous movements are shorn of their wonder, element of wonder, and were fixed to a particular cause and an aim and a goal. An idol of bronze replaced her mystic shape. Actually, the shape of nature, Mother Nature, cannot be outlined precisely. It is mystic. It is somewhat vague and escapes our defining intelligence. But even that, this mind manages to replace her mystic shape by an idol of bronze, a figure of bronze cut and dry that captures the movements of the cosmic vast. This idol, this image, captures, reflects something of the movements of the cosmic vasts, the cosmic forces operating in their vastness. That spirit is supposed to be captured by this bronze idol. But how does it capture? In the sketch precise of an ideal face. That bronze face is an ideal face. And it has precise outlines. In that, the movements of the cosmic vasts are pressed and represented. In the process, what happens? Forgotten was her eyelashes dream print. The eyelashes of Mother Nature, they have a dreamy quality. Because even when they act, there is an ideal. There is the idea, the real idea, and so her eyes are half here and half there. And that mystic dream print of her eyelashes is forgotten in this transcription by the bronze idol. And those eyelashes carrying on their curve infinity's dreams. The curve of the eyelashes are such, curves are such, that they carry the dreams of infinity, which are to be actualized. And lost the alluring marvel of her eyes, the wonder, the enchanting marvel of her eyes is lost in this precise sketch of an ideal face of the idol of bronze. The surging wave throbs of her vast sea heart. The heart of nature is like a vast sea, always bubbling with waves and throbs and vibrations of waves. Now, they are always flowing with a spontaneity. But here, the powers of mind they bound to a theorem of ordered beats. They are bound, chained to a system which measures these wave throbs in ordered beats. Her deep design, nature's deep design, which from herself she had veiled, from her frontal self, from her external self, nature hides the deep designs which are held in her inner depths. Now these designs in this reign or rule of mind, bold, self-revealed in their confessional. Now, you know, the confessional is a church system whereby each person meets the priest regularly and is supposed to confess his or her sins. And in the very act of confessing those sins, the person is said to be absolved by the priest on behalf of God. So here, in the church erected by the mind, in their confessional, these deep designs, which are hidden from the outer being of nature, they reveal themselves, self-revealed, as if they are culprits. For the birth and death of the worlds that fix the date, these powers of mind formulate a calendar. They fix a date for the birth of worlds and the death of worlds. The diameter of infinity was drawn. Now infinity, in the very nature of it, cannot be measured. If it can be measured, it becomes finite. So infinity is something immeasurable. But the mind pretends that it can draw the diameter of the circle of infinity and poses to have measured the diameter of the infinity, measured the distant arc of unseen heights. Similarly, there are heights of existence which cannot be seen, which are not visible, but the powers of mind have their own way of measuring that distant unseen arc. Not only the unseen heights, but and visualized the plumbless, viewless depths, the depths of existence which cannot be plumbed, which cannot come into view, they also are visualized by the powers of mind, till all seem known that in all time could be. The mind was satisfied that it has known everything, not only everything that is there, but all that can be in time to come. The mind presumes to have known everything. All was coerced by number, name and form. All existence, all the constituents of existence were coerced, forced to get into the formula of number, name and form. Nothing was left untold, incalculable. Everything was described, everything was subject to calculation. Now the poet says, yet was their wisdom circled with a knot, all their labeled wisdom was surrounded by a zero, because ultimately it amounts to nothing. Yet was their wisdom circled with a knot, truths they could find and hold, but not the one truth. The powers of mind could claim to find and possess a number of truths, but they missed the one truth from which all these minor truths are derived or seem to be derived. The highest was to them unknowable. By knowing too much, they missed the whole to be known. By knowing everything, as many things as possible in utter detail, they missed the totality, the whole. So in their preoccupation with details, they have missed the whole, which gives meaning to the details. The fathomless heart of the world was left unguessed. The heart of the world, which cannot be fathomed, which cannot be measured, that was left as it is, unguessed. Mind cannot guess what goes on in the heart, and the transcendent. The truth, the reality above the universe, kept its secrecy. Mind could not probe into the reality that transcends this hemisphere of manifestation. That brings us to the description of the second grade, the second layer of the higher mind, of the mind on its higher grades. Now comes the third, in a sublimer and more daring soar to the wide summit of the triple stairs. Bare steps climbed up like glowing rocks of gold, burning their way to a pure absolute sky. Here is the realm where the thought is very pure, bare, free of constructions, free of conceptions. And he describes these stairs where bare steps climbed up like glowing rocks of gold, burning their way, their luminous, to a pure absolute sky. August and few the sovereign kings of thought. Here are the kings and the rulers of thought, pure and few, have made of space their wide all-seeing gaze, surveying the enormous work of time. The kings of thought have pervaded the entire space with their all-seeing gaze, the gaze which surveys the enormous work of time. They are detached, they are aloof, and they are surveying what is going on. A breath of all-containing consciousness, supported being in a still embrace. The being that is watching, it is supported by a comprehensive, by an all-inclusive consciousness. It is broad. It may not be very high, but it pervades and it is wide. Intercessors with the luminous unseen, the beings of this realm are intermediaries between our worlds and the unseen, which is luminous. They captain the long passage to the world, the imperatives of the Creator Self. There is a long corridor between the luminous unseen and our world, and in that corridor, these beings, these powers, hold the imperatives, the orders which have to be carried out of the Creator Self, obeyed by the unknowing earth. The earth obeys the imperatives of the Creator Self, but unknowingly. It doesn't obey consciously. Obeyed by unknowing earth, and by conscious heaven. Not only the earth obeys the imperatives of God, the Creative Self, but even the conscious heaven obeys. The difference between the earth and heaven is that the heaven obeys consciously, while earth carries out unknowingly. Their thoughts of these kings of thought are partners in its vast control. In the exercise of that control of the imperatives, the thought movement of the kings of thought, they participate as partners. A great all-ruling consciousness is there, and mind unwitting serves a higher power. At this level, mind, without knowing it, it starts serving a higher power, which is the power of an all-ruling consciousness. It is a channel, not the source of all. The mind comes in its true role here. It is a channel, but not the source of all. Now, here is the observation of the poet. That is why he says, Because there is an imperative of the self, creative self, which is being transmitted by the kings of thought, obeyed by the earth unknowing and by the heaven consciously, the cosmos is no accident in time. This world of ours, this great series of worlds of which we form a part, it is not an accident. It is not something that has come to be fortuitously. There is a meaning in each play of chance. What we don't understand, what we cannot explain, we call it chance. But he says, there is a meaning in each play of chance. If only we have the eyes to see, the wisdom to perceive, there is no chance. There is a meaning. There is freedom in each face of fate. We dismiss things saying that it is fate. But he says, no, in each face of fate, in each moment of fate, in each aspect of fate, there is freedom. Fate is a name. There is freedom. Behind fate, there is a freedom of my soul which has erected that fate. Fate comes into being by the exercise by my soul of its freedom to grow in whatever way it chooses. That is why elsewhere Sri Aurobindo says that the soul is the architect of its fate. Fate is the child of past energies. Whose energies? Our own. Fate is not something with which we are saddled by an outside agency. Fate is not something that is determined for us by God. It is determined by us for ourselves. And the origin of fate is an exercise of free will by each one of us, and an accumulated result of our exercise of choice becomes destiny, becomes fate. So he says, there is a freedom in each face of fate. A wisdom knows and guides the mysteried world. This world may be a mystery, full of mystery. We may not be able to explain its various movements, but there is a wisdom. There is a divine wisdom which knows where it goes, and it not only knows, but it guides. Prajna netroyam lokaha. In the Aitareya Upanishad, there is a passage. It says, Prajna netraha ayam lokaha. This world has wisdom for its eye. It is not something that is left to itself, but there is a wisdom, direction of God in its total movement. A wisdom knows and guides the mysteried world. A truth gaze shapes its beings and events. There is a gaze of the creative Godhead, which is truth in manifestation. And that gaze really shapes all the beings, all the forms and all the movements and all the events of this mysterious world. A world self-born upon creation's heights. This world is something not created, not produced but self-born, a world self-born upon creation's heights, voice of the eternal in the temporal spheres, voice of the eternal in these domains of time, prophet of the scenes of the absolute. This word holds the prophecy. This word envisages what the absolute sees is going to happen. Sows the idea's significance in form. The idea here is the real idea of which your window speaks. The real idea is the truth to be realized, to be worked out, which is planted as a seed in every soul, in every soul spark. And that idea's significance in form is sown by this word, self-born word. And from that seed, the growths of time arise. Word is the creative force, sound. And through the agency of sound, the true idea assumes form. And from that seed, all the rest, the growths of time arise. At the origin, there is that idea, there is that sound. On peaks beyond our ken, the all wisdom sits. There are peaks of existence on the hill of our world. And on that, beyond our sight,